ཁྱི ཕྱད མ ཁྱི ཕྱད མ
Good morning. Yesterday we continued to look at the mind of enlightenment, bodhicitta. And we spoke about this in terms of the engaging bodhicitta. And then we mentioned yesterday how this mind of bodhicitta is something that we need to generate or cultivate every day. And we should go through all the steps, starting with seeing all sentient beings as our mothers, recollecting on their great kindness, and generating the wish to repay their kindness. And we should continue the through all the steps of the sequence until we give rise to the mind taking responsibility to liberate all sentient beings from the state of suffering and to lead them to the state of enlightenment. And to do that, make the commitment to attain enlightenment ourselves. So this meditation we should do every day. And then furthermore, we should meditate on the practices of a bodhisattva. So we should meditate on the practices such as of generosity, ethical conduct, and the like. And then after our meditation, during our day, we should engage in these activities of a bodhisattva, the practices of generosity, guarding ethical conduct, patience, and the like. So this is something that we should engage in habitually. And then at the end of the day, when we come to dedicate this now tremendous amount of virtue that we have accumulated, we should do so in accordance with that motivation that we set, the motivation of leading all sentient beings to the state free from all forms of suffering, the state of full enlightenment. And furthermore, one should at that point make the commitment again that one will continue on this path until one has attained one's goal and achieved the state of enlightenment. And to do this, one then makes the aspirational prayers that one continues to, in all future lives, continues to meet a Mahayana virtuous friend, to have faith in him, and to receive teachings and to practice the teachings one has received. And so this is how we should practice ourselves every day.
Jawa ini dah sanjukovan tu bi nyu, ane kena cekore kita
So now we'll continue with the presentation. We're looking at having received the Bodhisattva vows, then one engages in the practice of ethical conduct, and how this leads then to the attainment of enlightenment. So can I read the first two lines of verse
32?
So here where we see observing the vow, so this actually doesn't just refer to engaging bodhicitta, but will also refer to the vows of individual liberation. So we'll be looking at how one would train and guard both sets of vows.
So the
ethical conduct of a bodhisattva who's engaging in the practice of guarding their vows, then this is the cause that gives rise to the purification of one's body, speech, and mind. So this would be done through, first of all, engaging in ensuring that one doesn't engage in any of the acts of the ten non-virtues. So through not engaging in any of the acts of the ten non-virtues, one isn't then accumulating non-virtuous karma with one's body, speech, and mind. And then this is part of the progression towards purifying one's body, speech, and mind.
When one
engages in a non-virtuous act, one would do so either through it being a physical act, so one engages with bodily in this non-virtuous act, or verbally, or mentally. Other than through engaging in non-virtue, through the body, speech and mind, there is no other way to engage in non-virtues. So therefore, these three doors need to be guarded and protected from any type of non-virtuous activity. And because any of these non-virtuous activities serve to go against the bodhisattva ideal, in that they harm others. So if one, of course, kills or one steals, this is an act that's harmful towards others. And similarly, with acts of a verbal act such as lying or divisive speech, or mental acts as well, they have the component of being harmful towards others. So these all should be guarded against. And other than through these three doors, there is no other way to accumulate non-virtue. In terms of guarding the speech, then here we're guarding ourselves from engaging in acts of verbal expressions of lying, of divisive speech, or harsh speech, or idle speech. And because again, these are serve to harm others. So these we should guard against and ensure we don't engage in any negative acts of the speech. And this is how we guard our ethical, our verbal ethical conduct. And then similarly with guarding our ethical conduct in terms of mental behavior. So here we need to guard our mind from the minds of covetousness, harmful intent, and wrong views. And so through guarding our mind in this way, we will protect our ethical conduct. So guarding these vows of ethical conduct is something that all bodhisattvas will do, because bodhisattvas can be divided into those of particularly sharp intelligence, those are of more ordinary capacity, and those of a lesser capacity. So whatever capacity a bodhisattva has, whatever in particular here mental capacity a bodhisattva has, all of them engage in this practice of guarding ethical conduct. And within the bodhisattva vows, there are many divisions to the vows, but they all come down to guarding one's behavior from harming others. And then this is something that all bodhisattvas engage in.
And
again, I read the third and fourth, well, we have five here. Again, I read then the rest of the verse.
Nyeba,
So here, there's the three trainings of ethical conduct. So here, this refers to the bodhisattva guards their ethical conduct in terms of cutting any kind of non-virtuous behavior, any harmful behavior. Secondly, ensures that when they are engaging in virtuous practices, they don't incur any non-virtue. And then thirdly, they, when working for the welfare of others, that they don't incur any non-virtue. So these three again. When the bodhisattva is cuts or completely blocks any form of non-virtuous behavior, and in particular when engaging in virtuous activity, then they guard against any non-virtue being incurred. And thirdly, then when working for the welfare of sentient beings, they ensure that they don't incur any negativities.
So
just to explain this first one. So this first one is the ethical conduct of guarding one's vows from any transgression, or maybe it could be said the ethical conduct of cutting any form of non-virtue. But this is specifically in the context of the vows. So here, the bodhisattva ensures that through their body, speech, and mind, they don't engage in any of the ten non-virtues. So they make this heartfelt commitment that they will not transgress or their vows, and they will not engage in any of the ten non-virtues. So this is how they guard, engage in the ethical conduct of guarding their vows.
Chimbi Pajin to Labgin, Kawachasan, Kawakanish in a Dugin Sempik, Gavi Jawal, Tuba Dilla, Kawachi to the world, Chimbi and Yamlin, Tudimi, Yamlin, Tibi and Yamlin, Pajin to gain Yamlin Chiada, the Niggi, Gavi, Yamlin Chibi, the Niggi Kawa, Soso Rang, Kawasa, Shelia, Kawasa, Tua, and Dishada, and then Gavachi to get to himself, Kawachasan, to Yagi, Javatele, Kawachi to get to himself.
Then the, then the second one is the ethical conduct of engaging in virtue. So this then means when the bodhisattva is engaging in virtuous activities such as the six perfections, they are engaging in these activities so as to benefit others. So whilst doing so, they guard themselves from incurring any negativities. So they don't, in other words, they don't engage in negative behavior with the intention to benefit others. So rather, when engaging in virtue, they are engaging to benefit others and to create virtue for themselves and for others.
That's dunga ganesh na seya da semjen le digi yoha gi jawa de beje che je ge chigin sembi gi tene sam dela ane semjen tyenji gi chudum che ola semjen gi tyen shen le digi yoha da shen le ane kanga shen gi kanga seya da dene gi jawa le tyen dene gi jawa chi bi gi ane dela ane semjen tyenji gi chudum la gore
The third one, that of guarding their ethical conduct when they guarding their ethical conduct when working for the welfare of others, then this is here whenever the bodhisattva is engaging in activities to eliminate the suffering of others, they guard their ethical conduct and ensure they don't transgress their ethical conduct at such a time.
So
to give some illustrations, when the bodhisattva is working to eliminate the suffering of others, so for example, if someone doesn't have the means to feed themselves, then the bodhisattva wouldn't provide food for them by, for example, fishing. Or if someone was a patient, someone who's ill and requires medicine, but they can't get medicine for themselves, then the bodhisattva wouldn't steal medicine from somewhere. So when the bodhisattva is engaging in activities to alleviate the suffering of others, then they wouldn't do this whilst incurring negativities.
Dumba, Dumbi, Stimla, Miki, Chui, Chen, and Nibi, Chowar, Chigmi, and the Sunga did that, Chigmi, and the Samba, the Sunga Tata Sagua. Now, Gawa, Chidi, you Stimla, the Ni Jimba, the Sutimno, Serba, and Kiwi Chasan Dubin, Chigi, they begin, Gawa, the Tun, Jigendilla, and then Gawa, Chidi, Stimla, you are. Chesada, and Niba, the Niba, and Sumba Nidilla, quite Chigin, some other Chigmi, and the Sumu Mindua, Chigim, Chagim, and
Begin,
Sutim.
So the meaning in brief of guarding one's ethical conduct is to protect one's mind, to guard one's mind, and this is done through the strong motivation of I will not harm others at all. So with the strong motivation of not harming others, then one engages in the protection of one's ethical conduct. And furthermore, a doubt may come that if one is wanting to benefit others through, for example, engaging in virtues such as the six perfections, then one may actually, in a particular activity, bring some harm. Or if in the third division, when trying to alleviate the suffering of others, one may incur some negativities. So one may have such a doubt.
Pajin Dula, Dunkin, Saint Pigeta, Kiawa, the Shavan, Jay, till the Sukum Lion, the Kasha Wasana, Karasung Gorasana, Demig, Pajin Dugil, Lamley, Dundig, Dunga, Jag, Joba Meva, the Sungorwa. Jag, Jag, Lega Jag, Joba Meva, the Baka, the Jag, Jigorwa. Lega Jesan Sungoras, the Karasung Gorasana, Pajin Dula, Yamlin, Jag, Joba Mevata, and Delia, and Deva Mevata, Joba Mevata, Gavi, Chaval, Tumba, Joba Meva.
So So here with the Bodhisattva having this dominant wish of not harming others, and not harming others in any way, but only benefiting them, then there is a, if they're not, if they don't have clear in their mind their ethical conduct, then they may give rise to this doubt that this particular activity, in terms of the perfections or in terms of eliminating the suffering of others, could lead to a negative result, could lead to the engagement in non-virtues, and then they could back away from doing such an activity. However, if they've got present in their mind this clear understanding that they need to benefit others, but also guard their ethical conduct, then this will eliminate any possibility of them being overly apprehensive or lazy, but maybe overly apprehensive from engaging in beneficial activities of others. Because if they're thinking, oh, maybe if I do this it will turn out badly, or some harm will come to the person I'm wanting to help or myself, then if they're doing so with a clear motivation, this motivation will ensure that they are guarding their ethical conduct, because they're not wanting to harm others at all. And then knowing that their motivation is having this very clear motivation of not harming others at all, they will be guarding their ethical conduct. And with that clear, then they can engage in all acts of the six perfections, acts in terms of eliminating the suffering of others. So therefore, this practice of guarding one's ethical conduct is really about guarding the mind from going in a non-virtuous direction. And so this now should give us some understanding of the practice of ethical conduct. Primarily, it's guarding the mind against any non-virtuous thoughts, which can lead to non-virtuous activities, including when the bodhisattva is wanting to be of benefit to others. So this is a mind that they have consciously cultivated. There would have been a previous time when they were like ourselves, who haven't yet given rise to such a mind. But through training in the practice of ethical conduct, seeing its benefits coming about, then great respect for this practice would have grown. And furthermore, with this mind of respect, a further aspiration or a strengthening of the aspiration to engage in the full and complete practice of ethical conduct would have grown. And through this, their merit would have been strengthened, and their progression towards the attainment of the state of enlightenment would have continued.
Dam zang a zui ge cixu xiao xiao ngao ge mi ge li ge de yin ne 他们有个小孙子咱们小孩子然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢然后呢
If we come to this understanding that the Bodhisattva grew in their praxis through training in this mind of guarding ethical conduct, then we too should give the wish to also train in this way, to also develop our practice of guarding our ethical conduct. And again, so what this means in particular is to give rise to the wish to guard our mind from going in the direction of the 10 non-virtuous actions, and trying to prevent our mind from going in that direction or abiding in that direction. And there will be times, of course, when we do engage in non-virtuous acts and the like, but then it's imperative that one recognizes that and re-strengthens the commitment to guarding our mind from going in the direction of the 10 non-virtues, and re-strengthens our motivation to protect our ethical conduct. And then alongside of this, is we should be engaging in the practices of the 10 virtuous actions, so the opposite of the 10 non-virtues. So we should be engaging in those. And as we do so, then our ability to protect our mind from the non-virtuous actions will grow and strengthen, and it will thereby become that much easier to guard our mind from going in a negative direction. And as we train in this, and our practice strengthens and grows, then the attainment of our ultimate goal, the goal of becoming a Buddha, a being who is of greatest benefit to others, will come that much closer.
So
Bodhisattvas, through training in the mind of guarding their ethical conduct, they came to complete the two collections, the two accumulations, very quickly. And this then led to the attainment of the state of full enlightenment. So then we too should ensure that we engage in this practice of ethical conduct because of the power that it gives to our virtuous activities and how it leads to the prevention of non-virtue. And thereby our two accumulations, the accumulations of merit and wisdom, are greatly enhanced. And the attainment of our goal, the goal of full enlightenment, will come about very quickly. So if we have the question then, because we had in this previous line, the collection. So what are these collections? Well, this then is explained in the next verse, in the third line. And so these two collections are the accumulations of merit and the accumulation of exalted wisdom. So let's look then first at the accumulation of merit. So what comprises practices of the accumulation of merit? So here it's the meditation on the perfection of generosity, that of the perfection of ethical conduct, and the perfection of patience, as well as together with the perfection of joyous perseverance. So when one engages in these meditations, one is accumulating this accumulation of merit. And then we mentioned there the perfection of ethical conduct. So these subdivisions we mentioned before, those three subdivisions, those are two included in this accumulation of merit. So this now is to prevent the doubt of someone thinking if through guarding one's ethical conduct particularly well, the state of Buddhahood will be attained. So that way of thinking would be mistaken, because we see here there are these two accumulations, that of merit and that of wisdom. And the practice of the guarding of one's ethical conduct, that virtue is included within the accumulation of merit. But one also needs the accumulation of wisdom. And with both of these, then enlightenment is achieved. So therefore, only through the practice of guarding one's ethical conduct, enlightenment cannot be attained. So again, I read the first line of verse 34. So this then shows that the cause for enlightenment is these two accumulations. And when these two accumulations, those of merit and wisdom, have been fully accumulated, then the enlightenment is attained. So when these two accumulations are both accumulated to the fullest level, then the state of enlightenment is attained.
Oh yeah, that union is
Okay, so I'm going to then read the, where are we now? The last line of verse 34 and the first two lines of verse
35.
As the illustration at the top of verse 35 shows, that if for a bird to be able to fly and achieve its various destinations, a bird needs to have developed wings. If it hasn't got wings, then it's not going to fly at all. Or if it only has one wing that is fully developed, it's not going to be able to fly to its goal. So just like a bird needs both wings to be fully developed, to be able to fly to its destination, so too does a bodhisattva require both accumulations to be fully accumulated to attain the goal of Buddhahood. So therefore we too need to make effort to ensure that we accumulate both accumulations so as to achieve the goal. And just in the same way as the illustration, a bird needing both wings to be able to fly. Accumulate these two accumulations to the point where they are of similar strength or the same strength to achieve the goal. So, and then just to repeat again, if one only accumulates, for example, the accumulation of merit, one will not attain Buddhahood. Or if one only accumulates the accumulation of wisdom, one will not attain Buddhahood. One needs both, and they will need to both accumulations, and they need to be accumulated to the same strength. So to accumulate the accumulation of merit, one needs to know what this entails, so what the accumulation of merit is.
Mm. been a million something is being Yamna Chevain and Mandugini, a call of Pandoche, Paradu, and tell me some dance and go Jimbachina call of Pandoche, Chago, Nugoche, Chago, Mandulusunum Chago, yes. Is that Chigi Jimbala down when a poem midile check and a shena Pandoche, Mudu, Ganeshena, Pandochum of the Midu, di some of the Haku was. Di Hakoche, Chevain, Pando Hakovain, Colia Chiodin. 确定判断切当，考虑判断女不切切过，就当就算算那么切塞过，就那点那个算那么个嘴巴啦，那耶稣的个辛苦过来是。And to
show this is the illustration of looking at the at an act of generosity. So we note that there are three types of generosity: the material generosity of giving material goods, the generosity of giving fearlessness, and the generosity of giving the Dharma. So let's look at the one that's easiest to understand, that of material generosity. So before engaging in an act of giving material generosity, one first should identify what needs a particular person has. And having identified what their needs are, and thereby what would be beneficial to give to them, then when one engages in that act of generosity, because the what we are giving is so much more is of use to them, then the merit that is accumulated is greater. So this shows how one needs to come to an understanding of the situation, and then the act will be that much more powerful. To understand what the another person needs and to how to be of greatest benefit to them, then one needs to have developed what we have here as extra perception. And through because through having developed these extra perceptions, one is able to know the needs of others directly and be of greatest benefit to others. And thereby, the merit that one accumulates has so much more power, or so much greater. So then just to say now, in addition, so that was what Genna said, what this term here we have as extra perception. It's more commonly translated as super knowledges or sometimes as higher perception. So anyway, I've gone with the term extra perception because apparently it's closer to the Sanskrit. And so what it means, because it's a term we aren't so familiar with, is when we are able to know something that otherwise wouldn't be known. And then within this, there are different kinds of extra perception, and the one we know most commonly is clairvoyance. And then just to add to the confusion, maybe the term for clairvoyance and the term for extra perception is generally the same. But here it's talking about the group of extra perceptions, which are different ways to know things which otherwise wouldn't be known, and included within this would be clairvoyance. So if one has clairvoyance and one is able to benefit others in directly in terms of their own needs. Now, I myself, I don't have clairvoyance, so this is now a little difficult for me because I'm just teaching here, thinking from my opinion and in terms of what I think will be beneficial to say. I'm not able to match directly to your own needs, but if I was able to do that, then the benefits would be so much greater. Okay, so can I read from verse 35? I mean, we just read the whole thing, but he read now the third and the fourth lines. Those without the power of extra perception cannot work for the good of living beings. Then can I add it here? So with this mind of extra perception, the virtue that we, with these minds of extra perception, the virtue that one accumulates has so much more power, so much greater. The meaning here is that with someone who does not have extra perception, then when their virtuous acts for others, whilst being beneficial, of course, and will lead to the accumulation of merit, the amount of merit is incomparably smaller as compared to the act done by someone with extra perception. So therefore, without having extra perception, one is not able to work for the welfare of others in a vast or an expansive manner. And then this is explained or clarified in the next verse, verse 36. The merit gained in a single day by one who possesses extra perception cannot be gained even in 100 lifetimes by one without such extra perception. So this just shows very clearly how someone acting with these minds of extra perception is able to accumulate so much more merit than someone who doesn't have such minds. The reason for this difference is twofold. So firstly, a bodhisattva with extra perception, with the extra perceptions, when they are engaging in beneficial acts for others, then doing so with such a mind, they are able to work specifically for the needs of others and meet the needs of others particularly well. And from doing that, their acts have greater benefit. And because their acts have greater benefit, they therefore accumulate so much more merit. So that's the one reason they are able to respond specifically to the needs of sentient beings, and therefore they generate that much more merit. So that's the one reason. That's the reason in terms of when they are actually engaging in beneficial acts for others. The second then is in terms of their meditation. So when a bodhisattva is meditating with minds such as the extra perceptions, their meditation is so much more powerful, and therefore they accumulate that much more merit. And so, just to say again, here we're talking specifically about the accumulation of merit. So when engaging in meditation such as on generosity, with the minds of extra perception, the merit that they accumulate is vast. And therefore, it's said that without these extra perceptions, the attainment of enlightenment will not come about. And that's because partly the practitioner would not be able to accumulate the amount of merit required. And that's because their mind doesn't have the required strength and ability.
And the Niji, when she Yamlin Cheg, and when she did a Ganesior, as I said, the land down, the one she that Chidanga, she got him. That lay me in when she said, now you know you when she said, Shensin, she be when she said, then when Yamagi, when you need to be when she said, and then Jigay.
叫我的,其實我的,薩法西邊我寫下的,你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你你 five, so one will hear about the five extra perceptions. So the first would be divine sight, the second would be divine hearing, or we generally would say clairaudience. Then the third is the one we know, clairvoyance, or the cognition of the minds of others. Then the fourth is a recollection of former lives. And the fifth would be extra perception of the exhaustion of defilements. So I'll read that again. The first of the five perceptions would be divine sight, the second divine hearing or clairaudience, the third clairvoyance, the fourth recollection of former lives, and the fifth extra perception of the exhaustion of defilements. So just again, there are more than these, but this is when we hear about the five extra perceptions, it generally refers to these five. To give an illustration of the first one, divine sight. So with this extra perception of divine sight, then the yogi would be able to see objects at a great distance. And furthermore, they would be able to see very subtle or very small objects. So this is something we can't do. We can't see particularly tiny objects, and the length of our perception is quite limited. We can't see at great distance. So this is How is this useful then for a bodhisattva? Well, a bodhisattva seeking out beings to help, if they aren't limited like we are to those directly around us, they are able to see beings in need at a great distance. So for example, if they're seeing a being who's desperate for water, they would be able to see this being at a great distance and be able to practice the generosity of fearlessness by giving them water and sustaining their life, etc. Now, we're very limited. We've just restricted to what we can see around us. But a bodhisattva with this extra perception would be able to use it to be of benefit to others. And then the second one, that of the divine ear or clairaudience. So with this they can hear sounds at a great distance. And similarly with the divine eye, they can hear when sentient beings are expressing distress, when sentient beings are in need, and they can hear this from a great distance and thereby engage in being of benefit to sentient beings. Furthermore, if they are a long distance from their teacher, they would still be able to hear the Dharma teachings despite this great distance between them because of having this this extra perception of clairaudience. And the third one, the clairvoyance or knowing the mind of others. So here, if the bodhisattva having this extra perception will know the minds of others and therefore know how to act in a beneficial way to them and how to act in a way that doesn't lead to the rise of afflictions in others. So then they're not likely to say the wrong thing and generate anger in the minds of those they're wanting to help. Rather, they would know how to communicate with them so as to keep them calm, to keep their mind spacious. Then the fourth one, the recollection of former lives. So here with this extra perception, then they would know where they have been born in previous lives, as well as where others have been born in previous lives. And moreover, they would know what various activities and the like that themselves or others engaged in previous lives. And then this has the benefit of knowing the causes that have been accumulated and are now being experienced. So let me just change this. So this then shouldn't be called recollection of former lives, maybe, I don't know, recollection of reincarnation or something, in that they also know future lives. So here, the Bodhisattva with this extra perception would also not only know where people have been born and what activities, born in previous lives and what activities they engaged in, but they would also know when someone is going to die in this life and where they are going to be born in their next life. So that also comes with this recollection of past and former lives.
Mm.
Yes, sir. Then the fifth one, the extra perception of the exhaustion of, let's say, afflictions, the exhaustion of afflictions. So here, with this extra perception, they would know whether another being, what progress another being has made with the abandonment of their afflictions. For example, they would be aware whether another being was a foe destroyer or not.
So, can I read verse 37?
So then this verse here shows that with this wish to attain full enlightenment, then the practitioner is encouraged to overcome laziness and train in developing this mind of these minds of extra perception, because through developing the minds of extra perception, they will be, their accumulation of virtue will be so much more powerful, and therefore they will be able to quickly attain their state of enlightenment through this a rapid accumulation of virtue. So with this in mind, we need to abandon laziness and strive to develop this, these extra perceptions. So thus far we've looked at this presentation in the context of the first four perfections, that are those of generosity, ethical conduct, patience, and joyous perseverance. So that leaves the next two perfections, that of concentration and wisdom.
Then 안전심에 那就是个出名人的 当然后就是朋友的开始结果了是当然后就结果了那讲究什么控制控制给你那些钱你们那些控制的朋友上去和我们投过来呢当然后就也得去过来上去和我们投过来就在东莞社会了就在女的人的松懈的开始就讲究女的人的松懈的开始就讲究女的人的松懈的开始就讲究女的人的松懈的开始就讲究女的人的松懈的开始就讲究女的人的松懈的开始就讲究女的人的松懈的开始就讲究女的人的松懈的开始就讲究女的人的松懈的开始就讲究女的人的松懈的开始就讲究女的人的松懈的开始就讲究女的人的松懈的开始就讲究女的人的松懈的开始就讲究女的人的松懈的开始就讲究女的人的松懈的开始就讲究女的人的松懈的开始就讲究女的人的松懈的开始就讲究女的人的松懈的开始就讲究女的人的松懈的开始就讲究女的人的松懈的开始就讲究女的人的松懈的开始就讲究女的人的松 ཁྱི ཕྱད མ在我年纪讲究什么国民的，伢呢伢都习近平肯定，他这干干活，只要你们去了，他干这忙，我们这经营这边什么战略阶段，什么大的战略业务，就当然注意的呢，什么大节地头嘞，伢呢伢都他这什么大业务什么的，你这边呢，俺这里呢，天天给伢们吃来，对吧？的，休息一下，是吧？呢，对吧？休息一下，对伢休息一下，对吧？的那人家俺这里讲到这丫丫主顾的，实际上俺这里呢，俺呢。
ディリングラブジャティギ、ダンドスラブチレンジャーズディニア、ダンドスニャムチホレセチマシュシェ。ダディネ、アネ、ダニモジャブラシェアディ、ダンゴンシェドゥナ、ダンゴンシュクブレ、ゴンシェディシュウガ、ジェジマタチモレラロワ、ダンゴンシェア、ナカネシホレ、ダンゴンシェカネシングレラブディ、シニアドゥブレセチ、シニアドゥナ、ディネゴンシェリグレセ、シニアドゥン、ディネゴンシュドゥブレセ、ディネマシニアコシェアドゥ、ダサンダイパシニャムコシェアコツゴロ、アンダ、ニモジャブラマネシニアコアタディンマシュアチェ。
So we've heard then today about a lot about bodhisattvas and their training and the like. So we see that bodhisattvas, in terms of their training in ethical conduct, is they abandon any form of harmful activities with their body, speech and mind. Furthermore, in terms of their practice of generosity, then they abandon the mind of miserliness, the selfish mind of miserliness. And thirdly, in terms of their practice of patience, they abandon the mind of anger and all minds of that class. And through repeatedly engaging in these meditations, then they are engaging in the practice of joyous perseverance. So this is how the bodhisattvas of the past year of now attained enlightenment trained, and it's how the bodhisattvas present in the world are training now. So we too should to see them as our role models and train in the same way as them. And in particular, or in its briefest form, train in being of greatest benefit to others and train in abstaining from any form of harm to others. So here with this presentation and all the presentations, we shouldn't see it as something as separate as from us. Oh, these are the practices bodhisattvas do. I'm not a bodhisattva, no relevance to me. We shouldn't think like that. We should rather see them as our role models, and we should act in the same way that they do. We should train in the same way, engage in the same practices as they do. So we ourselves, we all want to experience only happiness. And we've come to hear that the greatest form of happiness, the form of lasting happiness, is that of the state of enlightenment. And we want to achieve this as do all sentient beings. So generating the motivation of bodhicitta, like we've heard about up to this point several times, we should then add to this the recollection that we have attained this precious opportunity, of a precious human rebirth. And moreover, we've met the Dharma, And we now have this opportunity here to receive teachings and to meditate on these teachings during this period of the retreat. So whilst previously in our life we maybe weren't able or didn't engage in the cultivation of these minds, we right now have this opportunity. So let's take this opportunity here and to strengthen our familiarity with these minds. Because through engaging in these meditations, our familiarity will grow. And as our familiarity grows, then our wish to continue in this direction will grow. And this has the result of it becoming easier and easier for us to engage in these meditations. And what that means is it will be easier for us to overcome all our obstacles to developing and maintaining a meditation practice. And furthermore, as we engage in these meditations, which are all on the side of virtue, the cultivation of minds of love, compassion and the like, then our accumulation of virtue grows and strengthens. And through our virtue growing and strengthening, then again, our engaging in acts of virtue, such as a sustained meditation practice, becomes that much easier. So that's what we've looked at today, and we have this opportunity to continue in this cultivation. And this afternoon, we will continue with this presentation, starting with verse 38, because we've heard now about the great benefits of developing these extra perceptions. So this afternoon, then, we'll look at how one does so. And that is through the development of calm abiding, and that's where we'll start this afternoon. Oh, yeah, some questions, please. Oh, lots of answers. At the back first, because it's from yesterday. Okay, good. So is there an example of someone who has these extra perceptions that we might know? So it's difficult for us to know whether someone actually has calm abiding or not. The extra perceptions or not. So this is not something that we can directly know. However, through thinking through many forms of reasonings, then one can come to an understanding that someone most probably has. But to know with certainty, this for us is difficult. Okay? Yeah? So is there a kind of extra perception that can be developed so that one can know where a loved one has been reborn, and if so, practices to benefit that person? Okay. So yes, if one achieves these extra perceptions, the one of the recollection of past and future lives, this will lead to one knowing where a for example, a loved one has been reborn. And then in terms of being, so that's the first question. Then the second question, even now without these extra perceptions, when whatever virtue one accumulates, that virtue one can dedicate for the welfare of this loved one, and then benefit will come to them. So whatever virtuous acts one engages in, one can dedicate that virtue so that they achieve benefit from your, the virtue you accumulated. Yes. Okay. Good question. So does that go against equanimity? Because we should be focusing on all, not just one. Then So Gana says yes. So then the way to do it is with the sequence of first dedicating the merit to this being that you have this close connection with. And in the same, and then thinking, in the same way that I have this close connection with this being and I want this being to be happy, so too do I have this close connection with all beings and therefore want all beings to be happy. And then one dedicates first to this person and then to all sentient beings. Okay. Sure?
I've just got another question on the same thing. Mm-hmm. Knowing, can a body step back, change that path? I'm trying to understand what's the benefit of knowing people's future lives, unless they've always been
able to. Sure. What is the benefit of knowing future lives? Is the benefit that one can change the outcome, so to speak? Okay. Then Sensun Tiki Kiwatema ki kiasa ahagona de pendo karere. Konso kiasa nato gyur togerebe.
Kese gyur tukuo maade, jidan hakuwa na pandoa karo yorilam na da ko semjian shantara kiwa na bine gyur tukuri ya se na gyue yoro wata da midi dine che bine dikwaro saati wain na ane ko jikewa che maa dine duksha chi kiwa na oho da da midi samda na sosyo xie na nyingyue na ane kyorang oho da dine ki jina di yakuyong sa maare 맨처럼 디디시오도 되네시오도 계주 두부선 코리아 계주 숙취했다는 세대에 마신년에 계주 숙취 두두나 되니 제마죠 야가 중요하지 용구로와 진짜데 시에 만년에 들었는데 제야요 말하고 토나야 코샤샤 뭐데 제야요 말하고 제가 최선 되니가 하고 고공원시 되기 하고 해도 아니 미 지코랑기 제해서 요새 년세들 곧 비제 다제 근데 제투고와
So the benefit is, as you suggested, that one, this can be changed, the place that someone is going to be born. But the way it's changed is not through the bodhisattva changing it directly, but through knowing where someone's going to be born, assuming they have the required relationship with this person, they can then guide this person in terms of what to purify, what to and what virtue to accumulate in. In other words, and what behavior to abandon and what to engage in. And then through the person following that advice and following it well, then their rebirth can be changed, their future rebirth can be changed.
So,
for example, If the Bodhisattva knows that someone is going to be born in the hell realms, then they would advise them to accumulate virtue, develop minds of love and compassion, etc. And then through this, even if they are still born in the hell realms, due to this accumulation of virtue, they will be quickly reborn from there. So in this way, they can help. Okay. Thank you. And then we'll finish here and continue this afternoon.
สาธุเมื่อเจอเจอเมื่อดอดอันเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเรียนเ